Okay, hello and warm welcome to all of you who've joined us for this afternoon's talk hosted by the Lighthouse Retreat Centre in Worthing. So, glorious sunny day. For anyone who's in the South Coast, you will be knowing it. And if you're not, then it is. Just a couple of pointers regarding Zoom. If you want to ask any question at any time, you're very welcome. Just put it in the chat. And if you want to address your question or comment directly to myself only, then just make sure you click on where it says, what's it called? Where it says two, you choose, instead of everyone, you choose Lighthouse Retreat Centre. Then only I will see your communication. If it says everyone, then everyone will see your communication. And the only other thing is that at the top of your screen, you can choose which view to have, speaker view, which I highly recommend. Otherwise, the other one is gallery view, in which case you're seeing everyone. So if you're seeing all of the people, it means you're in gallery view. Just go to top right and click speaker view to see the speaker only. So with that, thank you for coming along to join us, and the talk is being recorded, and that will be up on the website just about an hour or two after the talk. The subject, of course, is a good life is a no-brainer. And actually, it's a fantastic title because often I think we create obstacles or waste thoughts which prevent us from experiencing or having a good life. Of course, there can be many challenges in life, but a lot of it, of course, is to do with our thinking. Or maybe we use our brain too much, I don't know. Anyway, just a little thought from myself. But otherwise, I want to introduce you to Minal Patel, who's here to share with us on this topic, his own topic, A Good Life is a No-Brainer. And I've known of Minal for a long time because I used to see him in the Main Centre Global House. He's an artist, a singer, a performer. Performs in on the stage in various theatres, including the West End, and wonderful personality, wonderful singer as well, and full of life also. And I think there's no one better who can talk to us about making a good life a no-brainer, because he just seems to just move along in a very simple and easy way, very friendly, humble. Just an all-round nice guy. So, over to Minal to steer us through. And so the format is he will share, and then there'll be a Q&A at the end. Yeah, thank you. Over to you, Minal.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the lovely introduction. And it's lovely to be here with you all on this sunny day. Thanks for joining, and I'm quite looking forward to spending this hour with you all, actually, because it's a topic that came to mind a few months back. I'm also part of the events team here in London for the Brahma Kumaris and Meditation Centre, and so I often have these moments of quite strong titles for things coming up in my head, and this is one that came to me a while back from things that were happening in my life in the world. And so yes, so it's something that I have been thinking about for a little while, but this opportunity has given me the chance to think even deeper about it. And in the time that we have, a lot of things have come up for me, but in the time that we have, I wanted to share just a few specific thoughts around the topic of a good life is a no-brainer, because I think it goes without saying that we all want a good life, and we all strive for a good life. That's our purpose, in a way, of living, in essence. But what does it really take to have a good life, and what does it really mean to have a good life? And it's different for all of us, for every single human being. It's a completely different thing. It means completely different things because we're all in very different situations. Even if we're in the same situation as someone else, you know, in many ways, we're still different people, and we still have different mindsets and different consciousness, So we're still very unique. And so just a few things I wanted to, a few ideas that I had, a few thoughts I had about my own progress and my own process when it comes to creating this. Mark said that I'm an all-around happy guy, which in a way I would agree with, but also, you know, there's so much happens on the inner our in all our inner world that is not seen on the outside, and sometimes life isn't so great. Even being a meditator, even being someone on a spiritual journey, you know, it can feel like life isn't so great. And over the years, I've really come to, I was introduced to meditation as a very young child, 5 years old, and I didn't really practice it until I was much older, properly. But I definitely grew up around people who were practicing and people who were changing and people who were exploring. And so that vibration, that the energy that created that I grew up around, I think has helped me to, in my own personal journey. But I do want to share a little bit about the hard times as well, and what I've done and what how I see them in relation to a good life. For me, the first thing that comes to mind when I think about a good life is this idea of retirement. I think for many people, at least in my circles, that is, you know, or retirement from working. It doesn't necessarily mean a retirement from life or relationships or problems or anything like that, but the retirement from working. And I'm very lucky to, you know, there's that saying, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And for me, that's certainly the case. And there have been times where I've really been challenged by the work that I do and the things that come up within me, the challenge of feeling not good enough, feeling downtrodden, feeling like I could be better, lots of things to do with our self-esteem and self-respect. Also the insecurity financially sometimes, being in a creative industry, which I think nowadays is not limited to creative industries. I think it's pretty much the case in all industries. Feeling unsupported by staff, by manager, by managers, and you know, senior level leadership. I think it's, even if you don't work, I think it's a case of feeling unsupported by people who are supposed to be our support systems around us. So there's a lot that we can fall into in terms of feeling unbalanced, feeling like we're not having a good life, feeling like we're really working too hard for something. And over the years, as I've learned to think about and reflect on the teachings of Raj Yoga meditation, I think a few things have really hit home for me that I wanted to share with you today. And I wanted to start by actually just sharing a simple quote from our morning teachings at the Brahma Kumaris. And it's a very simple thing. It's a very simple line. And it's something that was spoken by the founder of the organization. And it's, don't distress yourself chasing after shells. Make effort and make your life as valuable as a diamond. Don't be careless. So much of that simple sentence for me is, it's so practical and profound, because it's about having a good life, looking for one, but don't be distressed by it in the process. And I think in this day and age, in this world, we're presented with a lot of options to create goodness in our lives through different ways, whether it's through spirituality, whether it's through relationships, whether it's through anything really, you know, through the media. There's so many different things that are offered to us, and we're told, if you do this thing, or if you buy this thing, or if you engage in this thing, then you'll be happier, you'll be more peaceful, you'll be more loving, you'll be more this, more that, you know. And it's getting more and more trickier to choose which ones to pick. But when we really strip it back down to bare basic, to bare minimum, firstly, it's important to reflect on the ingredients of a good life. What make a good life? What makes a good life? Before we can understand how to create a good life, right? It's a bit like a recipe for a meal or a dessert or something, or even a cup of tea, you know. We've got to know that the ingredients are of good quality. And if the ingredients aren't of good quality, then first of all, the meal's not going to, it's going to be harder to create the meal or the cup of tea or whatever. And it's also going to, may not taste as good as it could have. it may not last as long either. You know, if I wanted to make a meal for the week, then I want good ingredients. I want ingredients that are going to last, not ingredients that are going to go off in a couple of days, even if they're in optimum conditions. And so it's really important to reflect on the ingredients, what they are first, and to figure out where I can get the best ingredients from for my life. And so I just wanted to explore and just reflect with you on three different aspects that I think we are presented with, three different categories of ingredients that we are presented with in this world at this stage for me. And so I'm just going to share a little PowerPoint with you. So the first category that we are presented with, and probably the main category in society, the way that the world exists, the way that we work, society functions, is a matter-based, materialistic society. And I think it's good to say at this point, actually, that none of these, there's three different ones, and none of these are necessarily any better than the other. None of these are right or wrong. But it's just an observation to see which ones we're presented with at this stage in our reflection together. And so when we talk about materialistic or matter-based or something like that, then what I really mean about that, what it means for me, is a life based on anything to do with matter. So everything that we see around us is made from matter. Our bodies are made from matter. Our relationships are usually based on a materialistic perspective. Because how someone looks, where they're from, what language they speak, all of those things are materialistic, essentially. Even our brain is materialistic, so how we process things sometimes can be a materialistic thing sometimes. Where we're from, you know, all those things. And so all of our judgments in our life of good and bad, of right and wrong, of things that we think to be a good life are based on materialistic things. So for example, you know, a very simple one is body image. In an ideal world, everyone would have a six pack and everyone would be beach body ready and everyone would be on the beach, all that kind of stuff, you know. In an ideal world, that's what society tells us is the best of a good body. It's through advertising, through the way that we speak about things, through what we see. And then we learn that and we think that, and then we think that about our life. We think, oh, I don't have a beach body ready, which means I don't have a good life. A beach ready body and I don't have a good life. And so we start to have these subtle kind of moments of negative thinking, I would say, about these things. We could take it, there's so many different aspects that we could explore amongst this matter-based column or category. The other thing is something that's quite relevant to us in this current time is people's race, you know. Even nature is another one, the fact that climate change is such a big thing now, but some people just completely are blind to it. and it's not through no fault of their own. It's just the way that they see things. But it can certainly a materialistic, I mean, nature is also material. And so we think that if nature is not very good, then we are not, also not very good. And so we always connect things back to our life. You know, I cannot do something because of something materialistic in the way. I cannot have a good life because of something materialistic in the way. So that's the first category that we're presented with. And we make our decisions based on that. You know, even things like I live in London, so I have this many opportunities, or I live in Worthing, so I have this many opportunities. That's also a materialistic mindset. We allow matter to confine us into space and time. And so then the next category, I would say, is the moralistic category. So this is a life based on learned values, learned rights and wrongs, basically. So you've got the image of the compass here. And so it's the moral compass. You know, which way is the right way to go? Which way is the wrong way to go? And that's something, the moralistic perspective is something that has been created by human beings. It's not natural to us, because I remember once someone told me, a very experienced meditator and teacher told me that truth is universal, and that if not everyone in the universe agrees with it, then it's not the truth. And I like that. I really love the way that positioned truth for me. And morals are not accepted by everyone. Some cultures have specific morals, some, you know, countries have a very specific moral. So what we think here about morals, how we should not jump queues, and there are specific things to the a UK audience, you know, that a Chinese audience won't necessarily relate with, or an Indian audience won't necessarily relate with. I've been very lucky in the sense that I've seen both a British perspective as well as an Indian perspective. And I very much resonate more with the British perspective of morals. But there are things that we do agree on as well. But this whole idea of morals is what is the right thing to do, what is the wrong thing to do. And then that also affects our ability to choose what to create a good life with, or how we want to create a good life. So based on learned values, so things like treat people like you want to be treated, you know. And this often is fed to us by our parents or our support systems, you know. From a very young age, we're taught these things. So that's the second category. And then the final one is the spiritual category. So this, I think, is more in line with truth, in that spirituality is not contained. It's the complete, almost complete opposite of a materialistic world or a materialistic frame of thinking. And so the spiritual perspective is to tune into one's self, is to tune into, it's the life based on a spirit, on me, the spirit. And what I feel is right for me may not be right for every single person around me, my parents, my friends, my family, my partner, my relationships, my colleagues, anyone, my society, my community, anyone. There may be something that I feel is very true to me as a spirit, as a soul, but isn't necessarily good or right for someone else. And so it's very easy, very difficult to compartmentalize spirituality or the spiritual category within that category. What is good for me may not necessarily be good for someone else. So if you have been on a spiritual journey for yourself, you'll find that actually a lot of this mass marketing stuff when it comes to spirituality doesn't really work. It doesn't really buy us in that sense, because we realize that true spirituality is about seeing what's already there and working on that and figuring out who it is that I really am. And so we kind of work through in our lives, what we do is we work through these three different categories, which I think is in a way the foundation of a lot of our confusion, because the spiritual category, even though it's probably the one that's lasted, that has been around for the longest period of time in human history, the spiritual category. The other two categories of material and moral have much more weighting nowadays in society, or certainly had much more weighting for a long time. And so we're used to it. So when we're asked to come back to a place of spirituality, when we're asked to come back to a place of basing our life on who we are rather than what we think we are, or what we think even. And because if we talk about material and spiritual being two opposite ends of the same spectrum, then it can be quite a confusing journey of up and down, and we could tend to go on a bit of a roller coaster ride of which one do I do, and then what comes in the way in between is this moralistic feeling of, oh, I should do what my parents say, I should do what my family say, I should do what my friends tell me, I should do what is expected of me rather than what is right for me. And so we get caught in this kind of moral standing. And we do it very naturally. Again, like, there's nothing good or bad about any of these things, but it's just to understand, just to kind of break down, you know, how we process things and how we work in terms of creating a life for ourselves. And we do it because other people do it. We do it because we're used to it. It's a habit. Or we do it because we get a sense of happiness and peace from it. One thing that I'd like to share, actually, is that from every single one of these things, we can get happiness or peace or love from it. From a materialistic perspective, from a moral perspective, or from a spiritual perspective. But the quality of the happiness and peace that we can take differs. That's what differs from the three things. So I think it's always wrong to say, and this is one thing I've had to learn from a spiritual perspective, is that being materialistic is not a bad thing. It's not something that we can judge each other for, because we're all materialistic. We have been for a very long time, and we also get stuff out of being materialistic. You know, we get what we need out of being materialistic, but it's not sustainable. It takes us to a place of sorrow very quickly, because when those material things change or move, which happens quite often, for example, our skin, you know, aging. When we age, it affects our consciousness, and it happens so quickly in the space of, you know, 10 years or 5 years, especially the older you get, you see the skin change quite dramatically. Depending on the type of life you've lived. And yes, the materialistic things around us, the nature and the weather and the job that I do, the people I surround myself with, has an impact on that as well. Or has an impact on the way I think, which then has an impact on my skin, on the way that my skin, how many wrinkles I get. I've only started noticing that I get these wrinkles in the last few months. not because I've been thinking any differently, but I've just noticed it. and so that's an example of something that changes so quickly. And it can cause us sorrow very quickly as well. And our lifestyle, our society is based on that. But when we move up to a spiritual perspective, when we see our world from a spiritual perspective, that I am a being of light, I am a spirit that is inside this body, that is controlling, that is moving this body. And the more we identify our personality within this being of light, the more we identify everything that we act and feel and think within this being, this spiritual being, then we start to detach our personality from material or from matter. And then we're able to very easily make decisions based on what we really need as a spirit rather than what we need as a body or as matter. And so the reason I wanted to kind of lay these out to you was because I'll just stop that for now, come back to it in a second. So the reason I wanted to share those three things with you at this stage was because it's important for us to understand what those ingredients are, like I was saying earlier, for our life. And in my own experiment, and this is something that I would encourage you to experiment with personally, is in my own experiment, is that when I have engaged myself in spiritual activity, spiritual thinking about what does the spirit need, what do I need, the spirit, the soul, then I tend to have a very naturally balanced good life. I'll never have too much of something or too little of something, because I'm working on uncovering and being myself very naturally. Whereas from a materialistic perspective or from a moralistic perspective, I find that when I'm in that state of consciousness, when I'm in that state of mind, things feel much harder. It's a bit like drawing a sword, blood from a stone, that's it. It can feel much more, what's the word? Much more kind of laborious, that's the word. It can feel very laborious. So when we get tired very easily, when we have had a very stressful day and we get really tired at the end of the day, you know, or we've had a challenging time, period of time, and we have to find things to help us be free from those things, to find a relationship that will help us be free from that, or at least experience the sense of freedom. We have to find a hobby or do something that will help us experience that freedom. So that's our perspective from a materialistic and moralistic perspective. But if we were to really live in a spiritual mindset, spiritual consciousness, yes, we would still go through those processes, and we may well feel those challenging periods, but we know we don't necessarily need to escape from them, because we're from on a materialistic level, but we can escape from them and we can actually heal them, and become aware of them, of what's happening inside me when I'm in the spiritual mindset. And so I actually had, when I was thinking about, okay, what does this mean for me practically? How do I engage in a spiritual consciousness very easily, you know? Obviously the first thing would be a meditation practice, a very regular meditation practice, so that I can, I would particularly recommend Raja Yoga, because it's about connecting with the soul and not just connecting with our mind. Also, I must say that with these three different categories, with a materialistic one, it can only be fed by materialistic things. So I cannot feed, a materialistic thing with a spiritual thing. So let's say, for example, when people talk a lot about, let's go back to this idea of the skin, changing the skin, you know, or youthfulness in the skin. They say that we can think our way to good skin, which is true, but that's a very, very long-term perspective on something. It's certainly not a short-term perspective on something. But there are creams and things that can help our skin. There's the sun, or not, or lack of sun even. There's so many other things that are scientifically matter, you know, made things that can help our skin, and quite evidently help our skin. And so we go for those things because they're much quicker solutions. They're much quicker things. But what spirituality does do, it has a say in everything. It has a say. It kind of holds. It's the glue that holds matter together, in a way. And so just coming back down to this, the basics of what I feel are the really important things to engage in order to have a good life, in order to understand and create kind of foundation points in order to have a good life. For me, the number one thing for that would be meditation, or some sort of very deep spiritual practice that feeds the spirit, not the body, not even the mind in a way, but the spirit itself. So that's why I would recommend Raja Yoga, because that's what it does. So that's one thing. I'll come back to that in a bit more detail a little bit later on. The second thing is what I eat, my diet. It's incredibly important. There's a lot of research being done nowadays about the gut being a second brain in our body and the intestines and stomach and all that, how all that works. Affects our mood, affects our feelings. And so you'll always find that if you've ever done research on other spiritual routes, you'll always find that, or even religious routes, you'll always find that food has a huge part to play in the way that one should follow a spiritual lifestyle. And it's because of that reason. It's not necessarily, it may be new research to us at the moment, but way, way back in the ancient times, even before religions began, I think they knew this stuff. They had, or at least they had an understanding of the relationship between our mind and the food that we eat. Very deep understanding. They may not have had the science, but they certainly had the practice. So what I eat is one good foundation to have in order to lead a good life, without even thinking about it. And it can be, again, it can be very easy to fall into the trap of, okay, what diet do I follow? But that has to be something that comes from a spiritual perspective, a spiritual understanding of food. So my relationship with food, there are certain foods that I like that I probably have emotional attachments to, or I have attached on a materialistic level or a moralistic level. I tell you a story actually about that. A friend of mine who I was working with a few years ago, he was from an Italian family. Obviously Italians have a very big culture of food, and he had become vegan for about a year by the point that we met, and we got on very well. We were having a chat one day, and still hadn't told his parents that he was vegan. And he was scared to tell his parents that he was vegan. And he would tell us that every time we'd go around to his parents' house to have something to eat, he would never tell them that he's vegetarian or vegan. He would just say, oh, I'm not eating that thing right now because it's, you know, or I'm not eating that thing right now. And after a while, he felt like his parents were cottoning on a little bit, but they didn't say anything to him. They didn't question it at all. But he was scared to tell his parents, especially his dad, you know, because we said to him, you know, if you were to tell your parents that you were gay, would they accept that over your veganism? And he said, yes. He said, they would rather me be gay than me be vegan. And that was and we were laughing about it because, you know, the way that society reacts to either of those things now is a bit over dramatic, I think. But it's only because of people's conditioning, people's understanding, whatever reasonings there are, you know. And in the creative community, it's full of such a vibrant community of different people, vegans, you know, people from the homosexual, LGBTQ community, you know, different races, genders, cultures, religions, everything. So it was a very funny thing for us because we were like, wow, what you eat is very different to what your sexuality. And so I think he eventually did tell his parents, and I think they did accept it, but that he was vegan, not that he was gay, he wasn't. But it was just a very easy thing to see how culture has a very big thing when it comes to food, our culture, the way that we're progressed. And so can we take away all of those things from our food and really just eat for the sake of eating, for nourishment? That's a big job, but it's certainly one thing that will help us to lead a very, very simple and easy life. When I can move away from all of those, and that's what makes us think too much about things, I feel. Is all of the emotional things attached to the way we eat. I certainly still am on that journey. I wouldn't say I'm at the peak yet, but I know I'm on my way there. So the second thing, the third thing would be sleep. So the way we sleep, how long we sleep and all that kind of stuff. Yes, there's lots of science behind it, but the fact that we sleep, falling into sleep and coming out of sleep, I think are really key parts of having a good life. You know, a lot of people say, I will only have a good day if I sleep well. I don't really need to go into too much detail with that, because also some of the things that I'm sharing, I think, are hopefully things that you've already thought about and you've already reflected on, and hopefully they're things that you may have already implemented in your life. But it's just nice to be able to think about them again and remind ourselves if we're not in that space. So sleep is another good thing. Sleeping well, not just sleeping well during the night, but how we go to sleep and how we wake up. What we do with the last thing we go to sleep, and what we do the first thing when we wake up. The other thing is what we put into our minds. So there's so many things to consume nowadays, especially with COVID, especially with all the terrible things happening in the world, the news, media. Media is a huge, huge natural mind filler for us, very natural. And news, just generally, even if it's not news on TV or on media, news of people, news of, you know, how people are doing, gossiping is another one. So this is really important, what I put into my mind. Even reading too much, overstimulating the mind, can be not great for us, can make us feel like we're out of balance, can make us feel unstable in a way, because the mind doesn't need constant filling. It is doing a lot of processing, of especially of the stuff that we already have within us that need shifting or need changing, the negative feelings, the stuff that we've picked up along our life. So then when we feed it more, we stress it out very easily. So what I put into my mind is really important for a healthy, balanced, good life. And to me, that's very different to meditation, because meditation, although of course deals with how we look at the mind and is a huge part of that, a much deeper part of meditation is the spirit, feeding the spirit, the thing that the mind lives within. So you've got the mind, and then you've got the mind that lives in the spirit. So we want to feed the spirit. It's like the mind is the organ and the spirit is the body, the spiritual body. The next thing is who I spend my time with. That's another really important thing. A company, good company, bad company, can be a very easy and simple thing to change for us. People, you know, there may be people that are very close to us who are not very good for our mindset or for a good life. And we don't want to shut them off sometimes. Sometimes they need us more than we need them. But it's just about understanding, are these people good for us? Do I need to take anything from them? I don't have to get rid of them from my life. I don't have to ghost them. That's a word that people use, if you're not familiar with it, to say, meaning like you ignore them and you completely cut them out of your life. I don't think that's the process. The process is understanding from a spiritual perspective, is this a nourishing relationship or is it something that's taking from me? And if it's something that's taking from me, then I should make sure that I don't allow myself to get caught up in that, because that helps us lose our energy, helps us lose the power that we build up through meditation. These are all very, very thing, very deep matters that we can think about on their own separately, but I just wanted to kind of reel them off in a way. And then the final thing is some sort of physical activity. Now, when I talk about this, I don't just mean exercise. I mean getting up and being active in your life rather than just sitting in a chair all day or being a couch potato, as they call it. But for any form of physical activity, whether you have a job, whether you're out, you know, with friends, whether you're somehow engaging yourself on a physical level, body. It could be gardening. It could be any other form of creativity, I think. But specifically related to your body, to physical activity. So this combination of things, I feel, helps us to have a very rounded and balanced life. And we don't have to overthink these things, really. Just go with the flow, go with what I really am feeling right now, what to do. It does, of course, it does help to have some repetition in these things, to do these things on a regular basis. But I think overarching all of these things is one word that I'd like to share with you, which we all know very well: simplicity. So as you can see, it's in the image, there's actually a cup of tea here. And I like to call it simplicity, as in tea, cup of tea, you know, because we're British and we love tea, and There's nothing as satisfying as tea. And I often sometimes think, okay, is the decision that I wanted to make as easy as having a cup of tea, or as satisfying as having a cup of tea? And if it's not, then I'm overthinking it. One of the things that Daddy Janki, who used to be the head of the Brahma Kumaris, who recently passed away, she used to say was, don't think. It's not required for decision making. If we do the work on a regular basis to connect with our spirit, then we will find a very natural ability to make decisions, to do things in the way that we really need them to happen. And so simplicity is a really important aspect to this decision, or these decisions that we make in order to have a good life. Simplicity is also good when it comes to cooking. So going back to this thing about ingredients. So we've kind of very quickly, and hopefully in a little bit of depth, beginning to understand what ingredients we can put into our life in order to have something a bit more sustained. And it's a law of nature that spirituality is much more sustaining than a moralistic or a materialistic perspective. It doesn't mean that those things are bad. It just means that they're not as sufficient for us. And so spirituality becomes really key for a balanced life, for a good life, for a healthy life. And so, yes, essentially, this is where I wanted to share. This is what I was thinking about. And I'd like to do a bit of a very simple meditation for you in a short while. But I'd also like to, just to finish off, and before we go into questions and any thoughts that people are having, just thinking about this aspect of simplicity, I think is important, because we often compare ourselves to others. We overthink what it means to have a good life. We overthink relationships, overthink the simplest of decisions that we have to make. You know, what shall I eat today? What clothes shall I wear to that thing? You know, so much overthinking happening. Whether or not we're on a spiritual journey, it happens. You know, there's so many things that we do. We're thinking about what we want to do with a job, depending on where you're at your career, what we want to do in our retirement, depending on where you're at in your life. You know, so there's so many things that we overthink. And so it's really important to come back. And if it really helps to have a cup of tea every time you make a decision, then let's do that. Nothing stops us from doing that. The kind of money we want to make, how we use our money. Finance is a big thing nowadays, because obviously the economy is not in a great space. And so we have to really become much more simple in the way that we use our money, what we use it for. And so it really helps to come back to spirituality, because it will help us to identify what are those things that are really important to me right now. And it's not a day process, it's not a week process, but it's certainly something that requires thinking about and requires reflecting on, I like to use, rather than thinking about. With ease and gentleness and care on ourselves. So essentially that's what I'd like to share really with you. And I think we may be coming to the time anyway, just about, yeah. And so I'd just like to invite anyone's thoughts or questions, or if there's anything anyone else would like to share.
Please put any of your questions in the chat box, or if you would like to speak out your question, just simply click on reactions and put a thumbs up, and I'll unmute you. In fact, I'll unmute everyone. I mean, I'll let everyone be unmuted, and you can just then unmute yourself if you want to ask a question.
I hope you're not overthinking. Don't have to ask questions. That's okay.
I've always said myself, if no one says anything, either they didn't understand anything or they're completely content. And I've always gone for the latter. So you've made them all content. Maybe they're all having a cup of tea.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they've forgotten to make tea.
So yeah, anything you see, a comment or question, do put that in.
I hope it did make sense, actually. That's one thing that's good to ask. If it did make sense, then just say yes. Or just let us know. Let me know.
Yeah, you can put a thumbs up or a comment in the chat. But as a reminder, thumbs up, you just click on reactions at the bottom. Oh, we've got one little... Thanks, Minil, for a very clear talk. And Jasmine.
Thanks, Jasmine.
Okay, so maybe just as a question, because the theme, of course, is a good life is a no-brainer, and you've really nicely shared on all of that, listing your three main categories of material, moralistic, and spiritual, and. What would be your experience and understanding of kind of coming back to the spiritual, even though I know you've kind of dealt with it in many ways, but just kind of summarize in a way your way of kind of giving the importance to the spiritual, even though there can be a lot happening, because you know life comes in waves, isn't it? Sometimes it's kind of life's a breeze, everything's all right, and then just when you think life is lovely. Suddenly,
something else.
Something comes out of the blue.
It's the nature of spirituality, isn't it? That it's not a. I think we often approach spirituality with the attitude or the consciousness that we have when it comes to materialistic or moralistic stuff, right? We expect spirituality to be. I put this in. I get this out. And it completely doesn't work like that at all. And so usually our time in spirituality at the beginning is often very, for most people, not everyone, is very almost like a bliss-like state, because we're experiencing something that is so true to us that we haven't experienced for a while. But when we get on a journey of really changing and discovering things about ourselves, we certainly go through, we start to put one thing in and then like we've opened a can of worms, you know, we have to deal with all of those worms that come out. And if we don't, then it becomes very hard for us to deal. And we move back into a materialistic, not even a moralistic one, actually. We tend to move back a bit further, I feel, into more materialistic space because it becomes too much for us to handle. One of the things that I actually wanted to mention that I now I've just remembered with that question mark was something that really helps me a lot, and I know many, many meditators do this as well, is to work on cleaning my intentions with things. Like, what is my intention behind the things that I do in life? Like the very simple things, you know, like what is my intention behind eating this meal? For me, something food has been a big thing of my life. I've been fed very, my mom's a great cook, and I also can cook. I mean, not as well, but I can cook. And I've been fed by the organization in Lighthouse Retreat Center, in various retreat centers around the world. I've been fed so well, you know, and I love simple food, but I also love more elaborate food. But I've had to really change my relationship with it at the moment, because I've started to realize on a much deeper level that there are certain things about food that trigger me, you know, that make me want to go to food. I became vegan based on the fact that, and it happened overnight, literally overnight, from the fact that I had a very clear realization that dairy was a stress reliever for me. Anytime I'd feel stress, I'd go and buy a massive bar of chocolate and eat it, right? I'm sure many people would resonate with that.
You still buy it, it just has to be dark.
But even now, I've completely taken, I took control in a very easy, light way. And overnight decided, this is what, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to work on the stress rather than relieving it, you know? There may be other ways that I know I for sure deal with stress and relieve stress, but it's not in dairy anymore, at least. But I don't even crave cheese. I don't even crave chocolate anymore. I barely have chocolate anymore, you know. So it was a really interesting experience for me personally. That was a very clear part of my life where I went, wow, my intention changed because I realized I didn't want to become a subservient to dairy, you know, specifically. And then on top of that, obviously all of the other stuff that comes with veganism, the moralistic stuff and the, you know, the way that the industry works and all that kind of stuff, you know. So, but for me, it wasn't, I wasn't scared into or feared into veganism like a lot of my friends were by watching Caspiracy or by watching this or by watching that, because for me, that's not, even though that was important for me, it wasn't what was relevant to me at the time. And it wasn't based on a decision of, is this the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do? It wasn't based for me on a moralistic, from a moralistic perspective. It was based on a spiritual perspective that I am a master of my life. And if I can't, and I really want to, really choose to make this decision for myself. So for me, that was a very clear indication that it was a spiritual thing. And I've never once looked back, never once craved anything, almost like my body changed completely overnight. I remember having a good dream about cows and they were thanking me for not drinking their milk. Like, you know, it was so fascinating to see this. And I hadn't really been much of a vegan activist beforehand. You know, I was kind of interested, but nothing that was forcing me in that direction. So it was quite interesting to see how spirituality changes us. Our relationship with God, the thing I was saying earlier, and I did come back to it, but the thing that brings us, you know, if matter feeds the materialistic side of things, what feeds spirit? And for me, that is the relationship that we have with God, that we develop with God. For those of you who have one already, great. And for those of you who don't, then that's also okay. It's something that you can maybe think about doing or experimenting with. But I was thinking about God recently. This phrase came up: God on goodness on demand. You know, break up. It's like God is goodness on demand. You know, the God. And it's like if I ever want to film the spirit with power, with the true source of spirituality in my meditation, then I just connect with God. I just tune into that relationship with God. And the more I do it, the easier it becomes. And then I think that awakens the power of the spirit in such a way that I can't, there's no mathematics behind it or science behind it. It's just such a profound thing for us that we tend to make our decisions based on the spiritual, on a spirituality very naturally then, based on love, based on peace. And we no longer become confused about things. I must say that I do sometimes fall back into an older way of thinking for myself, and I can really feel the difference when I haven't made decisions for myself, simple decisions based on spirituality.
Thank you. There's a question actually come up, very interesting one, how to forgive yourself. And that's quite pertinent for many people actually, because everyone's often done something or another which they regret. Big things, little things, and especially if it's something which has kind of got a lot of history to it, and the conscience might be troubling. So what would you say about that?
I think it takes a lot of self-respect to forgive oneself. And it may not be something that we can do immediately, but I think if we can, the forgiving aspect, especially if it's something that's been on our mind for a long time, or it's a big thing. But I think if we can feed our sense of self-respect, if we can often and regularly remind ourselves that, you know, I am full of goodness, that I am the child of goodness, then it puts us in a position where we can say, actually, you know what, I don't need to feel this negativity from whatever I've done anymore. You know, I don't have to hold on to it. I can let go when I choose. But I think it does take spiritual power to really forgive ourselves. So the practice of meditation, the regular practice, But also, I do think not to overthink it as well. You know, maybe do it a little bit every day. Maybe forgive yourself a little bit every day, as much as you really feel comfortable with, or as much as you can, and say actually. And it may not go straight away. It may take a little while. That may also help.
Very good, thank you. Minna, would you like to lead us in a meditation now for a few minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks.
Thanks for the questions, by the way. For your comments also. So just sit relaxed wherever you are, however you are right now. And I know it's been a lot shared in the last few minutes, in the last 45 minutes to an hour. But let's just tune into an experience of spirituality. Very simple experience. And so you may choose to keep your eyes open for this. In fact, I'd encourage it to keep your eyes open if you can. And just find a very gentle resting spot for your eyes somewhere in front of you. And just reflect on the thoughts that you hear. I am a being of light. There is no one like me. There will never be anyone like me. I could continue to struggle to be like others around me or others in the world, or I could be me. This being of light that sits in the middle of the brain. Behind the eyes, can feel a little bit generic to begin with. But as I move into a spiritual consciousness, a consciousness that moves me beyond matter. But allows me to affect matter. Then the experience of being light becomes real, becomes tangible. And I, this being of light, am made up of five beautiful energies, the energy of peace, love, purity, bliss, and wisdom. And the more we think about this, the more we reflect on these ideas, the more it awakens what is true about ourselves. That I don't have love or peace or bliss. But I am made up of these five energies. just allow the mind to hold on for a few moments. To these ideas, to experiment, explore these ideas with curiosity, and as I move on with my day, the rest of my afternoon, keep reminding myself that I am these things, that I am a being, a spirit, living in this body, and this body lives in this world. And the more I practice and enjoy this experiment, the more I will enjoy myself. I will enjoy life. Thank you. Om Shanti. You're on mute, Mark.
Thank you very much, Minho, for such a lovely meditation to cap off a really lovely talk as well. So I think we've got been given some nice food for thought. To finish off with a cup of simplicity.
Yeah.
To wash it down with.
Yeah, go and have a cup of tea.
And Emily says, beautiful meditation, Om Shanti. Thank you, Emily. So, actually, if anyone wants to put on their camera and give a wave to Minho, and don't go straight away though, because I want to give you some announcements, but please be welcome to put on your camera and say hello and wave. Very nice. No. Sweet, nice. So as I mentioned at the beginning, the talk has been recorded, so the audio will be up on the website in a couple of hours. Next week's talk is How to Change Your Inner Dialogue and Become Your Own Best Friend. That one is, I think, from Enrique from Spain. And we've also got our drop-in, what we call guided meditation experiences. It used to be called Learn to Meditate, but cutting edge, moving with the times, we have upgraded the title to guided meditation experiences. So every Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. and every Thursday morning, 10:30. So each one is for 45 minutes. So you don't have to do anything. You come, you sit, listen, enjoy, go beyond, according to whatever is your experience. And we've got the as many of you know, the foundation of everything we do in Brahma Kumaris is Raja Yoga meditation. It's like the central pillars of spiritual understanding. And we've got a course starting on the 13th of August, and that continues on the 14th, the following day, Thursday and Friday, next week, and then 20th and 21st, the following Thursday and Friday. So each one is 6 to 7 p.m. And the whole idea to bring more peace into your life, or emerge it from inside, really. And lastly, we've got a half-day retreat, which is Saturday, or 22nd of August, or two half days actually. So it's 2:30 to 4:30, two Saturdays. And it's goodbye to anger, frustration, and irritation. So if you want to say goodbye to them, join that half-day retreat. So all the details are on the website, and you can you can find out how to join from there. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining and being part of this little afternoon session and sharing in the good ideas and the good vibes. And I look forward to seeing you next week or in the week, whenever you come, you pop on to our sessions next. And again, many thanks, Minil.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure
to know that you're a good cook. That's going to be, I think we might be bearing that in mind.
I didn't say I was a good cook. I said I can cook.
That one out of the bag. We thought it was just your mother, but.
Well, you'll have to taste the food and judge for yourself.
Right. Well, we have to try it for sure. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Om Shanti. Bye bye.